Welcome to Your Family Dog, a podcast dedicated to helping families love living with dogs. Here are your hosts, Julie Fudge-Smith and Colleen Pilar.
Hi, today Julie and I are going to be talking about stranger danger, when your dog is really uncomfortable with people that you see out in public and possibly barks or growls or basically says, "You over there, don't come near me." So, Julie, you were just telling me about one of your clients. Why don't you share that story with our listeners?
Okay. Well, I have a fairly new client, and they have a little dog that they got when they've had her about 2.5 months. They got her when she was 4 months old. The breeder, they called about a litter, and the breeder said, "Well, I've got this 4-month-old that is now available if you want her." So they took her. And what they found is that she is very sensitive, shall we say, and reactive to people. So when they take her out in public, she's just adorable, and she is a very sweet dog, but she's very uncertain about new people. And they don't know how many people she met when she was with the breeder up until 4 months of age. And from the time they had her, she's met maybe about 20 us at 6 months of age. So what they find is that when they're out in public, people say, "Oh, what a cute dog. Can I come up and pet her?" And their feeling is, well, if she understands that these people are harmless, that she'll get over this.
Right.
So they have been sort of pushing her towards the people that are coming over to see her. And she tends to kind of shut down. And then they'll have the person give her a treat, but she won't take it. She tends to try to back off and freeze a little, and she growls. Mm-hmm. And when they told me that, I'm like, "Oh, thank heavens! I am so happy that she growls. This is great news."
And they said, "Wait a second, you're happy she growls?"
Yes, I said, "Yes, I'm very happy she growls," because I said, "Think of it as your early warning system." I said, "I understand that you want her to get used to people she doesn't know. I want her to be happy around strangers, too. But it's pretty obvious to me that she had not gotten the kind of exposure during that critical socialization period that she should have had to a wide variety of people and places, because some people she's comfortable with, children she's especially not comfortable with because she probably wasn't exposed to them. So the people that she was never getting exposed to, she takes issue with." Mm-hmm. And is basically saying, "Please back off. I don't understand you. You're moving in a strange way. You look funny to me. You're making me very uncomfortable, and I really need you to back off." So one of the things that we talked about is one of the ways in which they can now help her, that when they're out, she looks at a person, looks back at them, she gets a treat. Mm-hmm. When somebody comes over, if she, you have every right to step between her and the people that are coming over. And I suggest you say something like, they say, "Oh, can I pet your dog?" You can say, "Well, it's fine for me, but you'll have to ask Xerxes." And at that point, they kind of look at you. They usually stop and say, and then tell them to put their hand down by their side. And if the dog, now this is where the dog gets to make a choice. If the dog moves forward to greet the person, you can then chuck her, scratch her under the chin a little bit. In the meantime, though, if she doesn't, then you get to say, "Oh, I'm sorry, apparently little Xerxes is just not feeling social today. Maybe next time." So it's a way in which you can protect your dog, but not sound like, "My dog really doesn't like people, so, you back off," because you'll always get the person who says, "But every dog loves me." And I'm kind of like, "Well, my dog didn't get that memo, but whatever." So I think one of the things to remember is that if your dog is growling, this is a good thing. This is your dog saying, "I'm really uncomfortable. Please help." It's an early warning system.
Yeah. But if and your dog is a regular growler, we probably don't want people to come up and ask Xerxes too closely. At that point, we do know that it maybe isn't fine with Xerxes. I have a client right now who's got a big dog. And he freaks out if he sees people walking in the neighborhood, which makes life a little bit exciting for his relatively tiny owner. So she was telling us the other day that she was walking and he was doing great and life was good. And she came between two cars, and as she came out between two cars, she encountered two neighbors who were standing there just talking to each other, and her dog lost his mind. And she was having a very hard time controlling him and getting him to turn around and come back and get away. And her shoe fell off and she's trapped. And, this is horrible, horrible experience. And she finally had to just say to them, could you please move? Because I can't.
The poor thing. I feel very sorry for her.
It was very traumatic. I did tell her I now will understand when I see just one shoe along a street. I'll be like, now I know how you find just one shoe.
Because I'm always saying, how is it you lose one shoe?
Now we know. I'm not going to say the dog's name, but I said that I'm going to think of them always as this particular dog kind of shoes. Like, I'll be like, oh, yeah, that. Because it was so funny just to hear her describe it, but it was not at all funny for her in the moment. But in this situation, this is, she can't keep her dog in her house all the time. We're talking about how do we manage this case? How do we make him safer and easier to walk? And some of that's equipment, some of it is using equipment that puts the physics in her favor. A front class harness, well fitted. If it's too loose, that's not going to help you. And a carabiner clip between the harness and the collar, just as a backup safety device. But then also, taking amazing treats. So she's taking food with on the walk, and this dog is getting most of his food while he's walking. And he is being walked in an area where he's unlikely to see too many people. So it's not that we're doing tons of exposure, because he is right now so very reactive. It's not helpful if he has 20 times to practice on a walk. But ideally that we can have times when he sees somebody at a distance and he's actually doing really, really well, except for this one horrible surprise for her.
One of the things I've told, I was going to say, when you're talking about food, is one of the things I've also told people too, is that oftentimes if your dog is nervous or reactive when you're out, probably kibble's not enough.
Right.
You're going to need to make it a better treat, so your dog is much more likely to be able to turn and take a treat from you. And to be very careful of distances. If you know that your dog has reacted to other dogs at 25 feet, we're working at 35.
Exactly. And if you're offering steak and your dog is turning it down, you're probably too close. So that 25 to 35, maybe we needed 45. He doesn't like treats when he's out. Yes, he does. He doesn't like treats when he feels unsafe. Those are two different things. He doesn't like treats when he feels unsafe. But when he feels safe, if you're sitting on your front porch and nothing's happening, I bet he really likes the steak. So distance and treat value are both really important to helping to change the dog's emotional state here.
Right, which is exactly what we're trying to do. This is not really training per se. This is more counter conditioning and desensitizing to a very highly, reactive. It causes a high reaction. This kind of stimuli is just a very high, very difficult stimuli for this dog. So you need to work at a distance and reward them well. But this is changing their emotional state from, oh my gosh, it's a person and I'm really uncomfortable and I really better let somebody know how uncomfortable I am by growling or barking or whatever, to, oh my goodness, there's a person at 50 feet. And what's that? Chicken?
Yeah.
Really? And the person gets closer. Now they're 40 feet and another piece of chicken. And now, wait a minute. Now fistfuls of chicken. I tell people, I said, think in terms of trucks backing up and whole sides of beef falling off for your dog. When they get within a certain distance, fistfuls of chicken, pork, liver, whole cows are going to be given to your dog when that person gets really close. And then as the person goes away, the truck backs up, the food goes away. So the dog's kind of like, let's see. I saw a person. I looked at mom. I got a piece of chicken. She malfunctioned. This is pretty cool. I looked again, looked back, more chicken. She malfunctions again. Pretty soon she's really malfunctioning, giving me all kinds of chicken when this person's pretty close. Then the person goes away and the chicken goes away? Maybe if they come back, mom will malfunction again. And I'll get more chicken. And that's how we begin to change their underlying emotional state.
Yes, because that piece that maybe they'll come back is the beginning of anticipation. And if we can help a dog switch toward anticipation as opposed to dread, I hope they don't come back, to, ooh, maybe they'll come back. maybe that would happen. Those are conflicting emotional states. And mm-hmm. Your emotional state is really the main driver of all behavior, whether human, canine, or parakeet, whatever. If we feel safe, we behave better. If we feel unsafe, we don't, you know. So that kind of piece of looking at that. And with your client, we have a really young dog, and we're trying to help this dog develop a definition of the world that says, hey, people are fun and exciting. Right. And in my client's case, he already has a very strong opinion that people are not fun and exciting. So the first stage is not, let's see if we can help him think, oh, yay, people are fun and exciting. We need to help him think people are, you know, the presence of people means something good for me, but they're not touching me. They're not coming near me. Like her job, the owner's job, is to advocate for him in such a way that nobody's coming up and going, look, we're just going to be friends. Trying to help him develop a set of behaviors. And then later, right. we'll decide if we're going to say he needs to start being friends with people as opposed to just really happy to see them because they mean chicken for him.
Right, right. And a lot of it just, yeah, you're right. I'm glad you made the clarification on that because I've also worked with dogs who, whatever it is they're reacted to, whether it's people or dogs, have had a particular incident happen to them that made them very leery of people or very leery of dogs. And whereas, okay, then we're talking much bigger distances, mm-hmm. much shorter training periods. Like, you know, we're going to try this for 10 minutes. And if it's successful and we don't react to this dog, then great, we're going to call it a day and go back inside. So this is not something that's going to be changed overnight. No. This is something that requires a great deal of patience on your part and dedication to knowing that we're looking at incremental improvement. Mm-hmm. And also, too, to remember that, unfortunately, behavior is never unlearned.
Right.
Once you've learned a behavior, it could be that you're going to have months where things are just fine with this dog or seem to be fine. And then one day, for whatever reason, man, I really don't like the look of that kid or that man sitting over on the bench, and I lose it.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to, you know, warn my clients, this will happen. Don't get too dismayed. Just get out of there as soon as you can. Get your dog home and start over again tomorrow.
Yeah. And that's the thing, that in this particular case, they adopted an adult dog. They didn't realize how extreme the behavior was. And, of course, it got a little bit worse over time as he continued to mature mm-hmm. and develop these feelings. And they are having to look at each day as a unique training experience. Like, how's it going today? And most days are really good. The day of the explosion good. And the lost shoe, not so great. But that kind of thing is, we need to have that attitude of, what can I do to set myself up for success, to set my dog up for success, and to set my neighbors up for success? You know, we're not encouraging people to come near this dog at this point. He's not
right.
He's not unsafe to his family. But he might be unsafe if I were to come up and go, gosh, you're a really cute dog. Let me come pet you when we see him out on the street. Because he mm-hmm. is so desperately uncomfortable and unhappy in this moment. And unfortunately, those two behaviors, your young puppy who's, you know, really uncomfortable with strangers and my adult dog who's losing his mind, that's the same thing. It's just adulthood and a level of reactivity that's different in that. And so we do want to look at all puppies as, you know, in this case, they didn't have him as a puppy, but whoever did have him as a puppy, if we can look at what can I do to make this dog really enjoy right. people? And that's never foisting people on the puppy.
Never, ever.
And that's the problem is sometimes we're like, I'm going to socialize this puppy by letting people manhandle him so he learns people love him. Okay, he might have learned people love him, but we didn't teach him to love people.
Yeah, right. I think that's a really good point. And the other point is that the dog you're dealing with now may well have started out as the puppy that I have right now.
I think so, yes.
And it just wasn't managed well, wasn't helped through all this, must have been right. manhandled or something. Yes. And so that he has a far more severe problem that this puppy could actually trend in that direction if we don't make a difference. And one of the things I also told her, too, was you know, you need to be very vigilant when you are out and aware of what's going on. Mm-hmm. This is a small enough dog that she can pick it up, and she had it in her arms in one of our local stores, and a woman came around to display and surprised her, and the dog growled. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, you know, one of your jobs is going to be thinking about what is the space around me? Be aware of where people are around me as much as possible, and if you see somebody coming, some of the things you can do to help this dog would be just to turn so that you are between that person and your dog. Mm-hmm. So maybe you've got to provide a visual blockade, but that's kind of using flight to your advantage. Yeah. Adding distance and a visual block so that this dog doesn't feel overwhelmed by strangers. So sometimes, even if you're not prepared with a whole bunch of treats, there are things that you can do to manage your dog more effectively by being really aware of what's going on in the environment, where people are, where other dogs are, where your escape routes are. I think we talked about routes in one of ours, and I think that that's really important. But unfortunately, you can't plan for everything. And so your client who, you know, was trying her best.
She was trying.
Stuff is just going to happen. And try not to get, you know, too dismayed by it. If it's happening every day, then we need to talk about what are alternative things to do than what you are doing. But if this is the occasional thing, don't really want it to happen. But, you know, you're just going to have to move along and hope that tomorrow goes better.
Mm-hmm. And wear different shoes.
Yes.
She did say now she has different shoes for walking her dog. She had just slipped on a pair of sandals, and she's like, yeah, that's not happening again.
Yeah.
Lace up shoes.
Well, you know, it's funny, but I will talk about when doing an orientation for training, I will tell people, wear sensible shoes. Mm-hmm. This is not a time to be, you know, do not wear your high heels. Don't wear your Crocs. You need to wear shoes that are going to make you feel secure and steady.
Yeah.
I think that's really important.
And it is really important if you're walking a dog with any sort of fear concerns, because they can just, you know, bounce and bolt. And there you are holding on a leash and you don't have good stability. So in this case, he was barking and lunging, but it could go just from the, I'm just going to run away. And there you are going, wait, my shoes are falling off and I'm flopping behind you. Or even just trying to back up in a pair of flip-flops. You can walk yourself right out of them accidentally or any of that.
You can. You can. And so I think what's important to remind our clients here is that we're talking about trying to set you up to be successful, mm-hmm. as well, not just the dog. Because if you're not comfortable and you don't feel safe and secure in your own self, then you're not going to help your dog feel safe and secure. So let's think about ways that owners themselves can set both them and their dogs up to be successful.
Right.
So practical shoes is one thing. Mm-hmm. An easily accessible bait bag is another thing. That we've talked about that, and what equipment do you need?
Yeah.
And I think especially when you're talking about counter conditioning a dog to a situation that makes it uncomfortable, you need to have quick and easy access to your food that you're going to use. And sometimes in those situations, if you get a chance, if things are going along nicely, sometimes you can click. The dog looks at a person, looks back at you. You can click and treat. But oftentimes in these situations, I'm too busy shoveling food into the dog's mouth to worry about whether or not I'm clicking. I will have my clicker with me and use it if I can, but I just think that owners themselves have to. And the other thing I would say is no flexies. You cannot use a flexi with a dog like this.
You cannot use a flexi with a dog like this.
No, this has to be a 4 to 6 foot leash.
Yeah. So, it really all comes down to, every episode of this podcast comes down to building a good relationship with your dog, having good management techniques, setting yourself up for success, setting the dog up for success, and then using good training techniques to get there. And so this, like everything else, falls into that category of that we want the dog to know that you've got his back, that you're not putting him in situations that make him uncomfortable, that, you know, if you're holding your little dog and someone rounds the corner in the pet store, that you're going to body block. Yep. My body will be, you know, a stranger will be near me, not near you. So that teaches your dog to trust you. Or if you're the one who moves away when we see a stranger, it teaches your dog to trust you. So having the bait bag and the good shoes and a decent leash and a nice harness, those are some of the tools that help you to support that, to just set yourself and your dog up for success so that you can do the work of training and marking behavior and saying, this is a good moment. This is a moment I want to, you know, really work through. I think that that's right. important for our dogs because they have to know that we're not just throwing them into the deep end on their own. We're just like, yep, you've got a problem. Deal.
Right. In fact, yesterday evening, we took our dogs for a walk and we're going through Grantville. And our dogs love other dogs, but I'm not necessarily sure that other dogs love our dogs because they can be rather big and boisterous. So I was saying to my husband, I said, there's a small dog up there on the left. I said, let's just be aware. And as we get closer, the couple sees us. The man picks up the dog, walks into the street between two cars, has his back to us, and his dog can't see our dogs. And as I walk by, I said, I take it we don't like other dogs very much. He goes, no, we really don't. We get way too excited. And I thought, they found a way mm-hmm. to manage their dog, that they were very aware of the fact that two big dogs were mm-hmm. coming, and they provided the distance and turned the dog away so he couldn't see our dogs, and nothing happened, which is exactly what we were all aiming for.
Right. So that dog had a very enjoyable walk with his family last night because of that, because they were able to do those management strategies to help the dog. He didn't just have to stay home. He's not a dog who can't go out. He's a dog who needs some help.
Right. And the other thing is you want to avoid these kinds of things. So if you know that your dog is going to be reactive to other dogs and you just step aside or provide that distance, that means that your dog is then not going to go through that whole cycle of the adrenaline and the dopamine and all that stuff that's going to amp him up and make it really difficult for him to come back down and enjoy the rest of the walk.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad you pointed that part out because I think it's really important to understand that sometimes management is just the easiest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they could probably train and train and train and maybe get to a certain point. But if we can effectively manage the dog by just picking him up and turning away, I think that's a reasonable and good solution to the problem.
Yeah. Or if it's a big dog, adding the distance, just walking farther away. I don't think my client can pick up her big guy, but she can add distance, usually, and it makes a big difference. So we've talked in a couple of episodes about sociability and how important it is, and we really want dogs to like people. But if your dog is uncomfortable with something, that's what we're starting with. Let's keep everyone safe first and working on mm-hmm. changing that emotion, and then we'll work on making them actually love people later.
Right. There are two things I wanted to mention because I've actually thought of them. One was this is not something that's easy to correct on your own. This is something that usually requires some assistance.
Mm-hmm.
So get yourself a positive reinforcement trainer who has experience with dogs with aggressive issues so that they can actually get you started down the right path. And if you notice, and this is something that needs to be treated earlier rather than later, if you notice that your dog stiffens, freezes, growls, turns away, is showing any kind of sign of stress at the approach of people, call a trainer sooner rather than later so it doesn't escalate into a more serious problem that may or may not be able to be resolved.
Yeah. People often think, especially like with your young client, you know, that he'll grow out of it. And that's not mm-hmm. true. It's just absolutely not true. So, yeah, definitely as soon as possible to get involved in that kind of thing makes a huge difference. And I wish could have been the case for my client. I
mean, right. But they didn't get it when it was a puppy.
They didn't get it when it was a puppy. And it's a challenge for them. They love their dog, but they would not have picked this particular challenge had they realized.
Right. Well, the other thing I was going to mention, too, is that sometimes we know what our dog's particular triggers are. You know, it may be like the dog that I'm working with now is much more uncomfortable with children.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll do a lot more work with kids and making sure that kids are at a greater distance. Adults don't seem to have the same, he doesn't seem to have the same issue with. But it's not just age. I mean, it can be that my dog is very uncomfortable with super tall men
mm-hmm.
or people with hats or even people of a different race.
Yes.
And that can be really mortifying.
Yes.
When you feel as if my dog only barks at, you know, Asian people
mm-hmm.
or only, you know, barks at black men.
Mm-hmm.
This is very uncomfortable, and it doesn't, and it's hard to explain that your dog isn't actually joining up to, you know, the canine version of the KKK. It's just what happened was this particular incident, this dog did not have any exposure to that type of person when they were a puppy. And so therefore, this type of person is very scary to them because they've never had, they didn't have during that critical socialization period, a good encounter or had no encounter.
Right. And what and things that we've had no experience with are scary. You know, the unfamiliar mm-hmm. to an adult is scary. To a puppy,
right.
they can kind of work through it. And that. So puppies define normal in the first 4.5 months, like what is normal in my world. And that is where we get the dogs who, you know, are perceived to be racist because whomever they saw fit a certain racial category. And then later they are meeting people of a different race and they're like, huh, I don't know. That's kind of different. I'm working with a different client right now, and I live in a very diverse area. And this family said that their dog is seems to be uncomfortable with people of different races. And they have a 15-year-old son who has friends of all races. And so they have the double whammy of that the dog isn't entirely comfortable with strangers. But then we have 15-year-old boys who are, you know, big, active, boisterous, noisy. Oh, yeah, and fall into some of the categories of people he's not that familiar with, just racially speaking. So management is a huge piece of this. I'm like, we're not going to rehearse any inappropriate behaviors with your son's friends. So we're going to start with management, and then we're going to work on changing some of this. But it's sometimes not addressed because people are so embarrassed. They're just
– oh, yeah.
It's horrifying to think, oh, my goodness, my dog has these views that I don't share. But it's not really about – it's not really about that. It's about what have I seen before. Your dog could be equally – completely freaked out by people who use walkers, and we don't go, oh, yes. Clearly you don't like people who use walkers because your dog is reactive toward them. So we do recognize in that case it's the dog's issue. It's also the dog's issue in this case. He's just not familiar with whatever, right. You know, the people of the different races or the women with the flowing skirts or the men with the hats and the beards and the glasses.
Right. And that's why socialization is so incredibly important. Yes. Our Hudson, Emma was determined that Hudson was going to be well socialized, and in his first 4 months met 750 people. That's basically what I did for 4 months.
I remember the chart that Hudson had. I have never seen a chart like that before or since. It was socialization OCD, but it was really impressive and it worked. Hudson was great with...
He was.
Because I remember coming up with categories for you guys. Like, well, what about flowing skirts? Have you seen someone in flowing skirts? Yes, we've got, you know, 7 of those so far.
The chart was 4 by 5 feet. Anyway. But what I was going to say is we lived out in the country in Virginia, and we were getting ready to sell. At one point, we discovered that we had termites in a door off the basement. So I called Terminix, and they sent out this gentleman who was, must have been 6'5". I mean, he was incredibly tall, and he had this wonder. It was a really wonderful melodic voice. He was from Africa originally, and he had this booming melodical voice, and he was very dark-skinned and very tall and had this blue shirt with these huge epaulets. Now, Hudson had seen epaulets. He'd seen black people. He'd seen tall people. He had heard booming voices, but he'd never had this complete package before. And he looked at him, and he just stopped. And he stared for a little while. And then he leaned forward, and he sniffed a little bit. And he went, huh, dang, it's a person. And he went over, and he greeted the guy. And he hesitated at first. And what I think is important is that your dog is not, in that socialization period, is not going to meet every single combination on the planet. He's just not. But the more you can expose him to, the more resiliency your dog is going to have. So while he hesitated at first to approach this big, tall, black, and he had a hat too. I mean, it just was this, he was a very large person. Hudson was very hesitant, but then he went, huh, well, there's some features about him that I know, so I think this is probably okay. Mm-hmm. So that socialization will pay off so that even if you haven't met everything, your dog's going to be much more resilient in a strange situation than if he's had no experience whatsoever.
Right. And so it is a matter of you don't know what you don't know.
Right. And I get a lot of this, but he's so good with the family. I'm not saying mm-hmm. you're lying to me. I'm sure he is. It's just what we're talking about is a situation that makes him anxious, uncomfortable, feeling unsafe, and we need to help him feel safer. And right. when he does that, then you should notice a relaxation in the reactivity.
Yeah.
So, all right.
I think that's actually what our podcast is. Let's make dogs feel safer. That's all.
That's all. We should just get on the air.
Overall theme. What are we doing to make dogs feel safer today?
That's right.
All right. So next week, we'll be back to talk about the same topic with a different angle. How do we make dogs feel safer?
That's right. So thank you, everyone, for listening. And Colleen and I will see you next week on Your Family Dog.
Thanks for listening to Your Family Dog. Got questions? Interesting ideas? Colleen and Julie would love to hear them. Call 614-349-1661 or visit www.yourfamilydogpodcast.com to share your thoughts.